This is ACC CardiaCast, a series on the latest clinical education brought to you by the American College of Cardiology.
Really impressed by your level of knowledge about peripheral artery disease based on those questions to start. So I really think of all of you as ambassadors to your community about educating people about PAD. So I want to start with a patient story. This is Gertrude, who I met at a symposium organized by Vascular Cures, thinking about developing patient-centered outcomes for both CLI and claudication. And she told the story of having many years of going to her doctor and describing that she had leg pain when she was walking or decreased exercise time being attributed to aging or diabetes or arthritis. And eventually she developed ulcers and gangrene in her feet, and she actually went on to lose both of her legs to peripheral artery disease. And she came there really speaking about how what she wanted to do was have doctors to know about PAD to help other patients like her. So when we look at patients with diabetes in this country, close to half of them who go on to have amputations never had any vascular testing or treatment before their amputation. And in looking at awareness, 3 in 4 adults with risk factors and walking impairment are not aware of peripheral artery disease as a disease entity. And so in this talk, I'm going to give you some data showing that identifying peripheral artery disease may be an opportunity to save both lives and limbs, to emphasize the high risk for cardiovascular events in patients with PAD, looking at exercise therapy as a way to improve function, and really the burgeoning field of multi-pronged therapy for peripheral artery disease. So PAD is common, especially in aging adults as we get older. There's a very high rate of peripheral artery disease. So you can see this is data from the 2018 update from the AHA about heart and stroke statistics. And you can see that there's, in those individuals over 80, there's extremely high prevalence and that there's racial disparity. So this is in African Americans who are overrepresented with PAD. And the global prevalence is rising. And some data to emphasize the concept that PAD is high risk for both legs and the heart. So this is data from the REACH registry. So these were all outpatients with symptomatic peripheral artery disease followed in clinical practices. And you can see that there's, as we've described for many years, a high rate of cardiovascular events there shown for MI and stroke. But I think increasingly appreciated that these patients with symptomatic PAD are also at high risk for limb events, with a significant rate of going on to need revascularization and amputation. What about individuals who don't have identified PAD? So this was a study done in Europe looking at whether or not identifying vascular disease may reduce risk. So they randomized men who were 64 to 75, and they did a triple vascular screen. So it included an ankle brachial index for the diagnosis of PAD. And they found about a little over 10% of those patients were identified as having PAD. And when you looked at those patients, even though this was described as a screening, so an asymptomatic trial, more than half of the patients who were identified actually had impaired walking distance, so they weren't truly asymptomatic. There was a significant rate of starting on treatments that patients hadn't previously received, and a pretty reasonable number needed to screen to save one life of 169. And PAD travels with other cardiovascular disease, and those patients who have overlaps between PAD and coronary artery disease or PAD and cerebrovascular disease, this is common, and they have a higher risk of going on to have events. And they may help our risk stratification or patient identification for intensification of therapies. And at the moment, if you look at PAD patients, so this is data from Jeff Berger's group looking at under treatment for PAD, and you can see that in the blue, those individuals with PAD alone had consistently lower rates of receiving risk reduction therapies than those who had PAD compliant with CAD. What about thinking about treatments for limb symptoms and PAD, so for claudication? And based on guideline therapy, as directed therapy, as well as clear clinical trial evidence, exercise therapy, so supervised exercise therapy, is the initial treatment for claudication in patients with PAD. And in this country, it was only in May 2017 that we have the decision that this is covered at least through Medicare across the country and many private insurance now. So this is really an era that supervised exercise programs are being set up for patients with PAD. And again, this data has been here for many years that exercise therapy increases walking distance and improves quality of life. It's highly cost effective when compared to endovascular therapy. And there's a growing literature looking at alternative approaches to using supervised exercise therapy in PAD. And really, it's interesting, you know, since this has been covered and I go back to my PAD patients and I've been offering them all supervised exercise that I couldn't offer them before, you realize that there are a lot of barriers that are over and above just the coverage issue, which is people can't come to the hospital three times a week. They have other things in their lives, their cost to coming in. And so I think that as we move forward, it's really going to be important to look at other ways to do this. What about reducing limb events? So this is data from the COMPASS trial looking at low-dose rivaroxaban combined with aspirin as compared to aspirin alone or rivaroxaban alone. And you can see that in the PAD subgroup, which was over 7,000 individuals, there was a reduction in the overall combined event rate of either major adverse cardiovascular events or major adverse limb events or major amputation. And also there's data showing that individuals who have a limb event are very high risk, particularly high risk to going on to having future events. So they really define the highest risk subset of individuals who have a limb event. There's other therapies that are now being shown to reduce events. So what about intensification of lipid therapy? And so this is a subset looking at PAD individuals in the Fourier trial, but there are other trials looking at intensification of lipid therapy. And really, I think what's exciting about a lot of this data is that we're finally looking at limb events in these clinical trials and showing that you can reduce limb events, both that these events are common, that they're debilitating to patients, and that there's a potential to reduce them with increased intensification of therapy, suggesting that there is potentially some benefit to identifying PAD as individuals who we may, again, target for more therapies. And similarly, with novel diabetic therapies in PAD, again, I'm showing one study from the EMPA-REG outcome trial that included over close to 1,500 patients with PAD. And in this group of individuals, there's a reduction in a combined endpoint of cardiovascular events, death, and amputation. What about revascularization? So I put a couple of pieces here. I think revascularization is clearly helpful in selected groups of PAD patients. In patients who have advanced disease with critical limb ischemia, it's a way to preserve their limb. And I put this data from the Dartmouth Atlas looking at rates of leg amputation in individuals with PAD and diabetes across the country. So the darker the color, the higher rates of amputation. And you can see that there's a huge variability across the country in terms of the rates of amputation, which really suggests that there's an opportunity to have a better preventive therapy to try to reduce the rates of amputation, especially in certain areas. And, you know, it's interesting, we think a lot, there are certain regions, and then also there are clearly rural areas, I think, have an over-representation for leg amputation in patients with PAD. And the second set of data there is from the ERASE trial, which was a trial looking at patients with claudication, and the question was, is combining exercise therapy, supervised exercise therapy, with the revascularization strategy, is there additive benefit? And the answer is yes. So those individuals who had both exercise therapy and revascularization had a better improvement in their walking distance and other quality of life metrics as compared to those who had exercise alone. So I think I've shown you overall that we're moving towards an era of a multi-pronged approach to PAD. So the first part is detecting PAD, and that is in patients who have symptoms, and Dr. Gornick will talk more about that, and preventing both major adverse cardiovascular events as well as limb events in high-risk patients. Working on restoring function, starting with exercise therapy and in selected patients intervention, And implementation is so important because many of these patients don't receive at the moment our guideline-directed therapies for PAD. So I'm going to finish there. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been the ACC CardioCast, your latest education from the American College of Cardiology. Go to acc.org to find this and other additional resources related to today's show.